Hey everybody, it's Anthony here. I just wanted to let you know that Dueling GMs will be taking a bit of a long rest as we retool, reconfigure, take a little bit of some personal time, and we hope to be back very, very soon. In the meantime, we may give you a few sneak peeks of what we're working on and a couple extra quick hits along the way. But like I said, we'll try to be back as soon as possible. For this week, take a listen at a conversation I had with myself about player-driven stories. Thanks. Hey friends, it's Anthony again. I want to talk a little bit about something that I'm calling player-directed stories. I see too many DMs who struggle to integrate PCs, backgrounds, relevant character arcs into their campaigns. And I hear of far too many players who struggle to buy into a story or a setting that they have no true connection to. And that's just with the homebrew campaigns. This goes up astronomically for any pre-written adventure paths and modules who, by design, are forced to create a one-size-fits-all story and hope that the players simply just go along to get along. But there's another way to go about this. One where your players will feel like you really worked hard to integrate their desires and needs into just a really cool story. One where there are multiple branching arcs and each one could seamlessly tie into another or continue spiraling down its own course. And one in which, well, honestly, the players do the bulk of the work for you. So let me give you five tips for coming up with player-directed stories. And then I'll give you some examples along the way as well. Number one, start with a premise and a promise. Give them a concept. Something that they can wrap their heads around. It doesn't have to be very detailed, but it needs to give them enough that they know where the story may be going or what the character that you're asking them to make should embody. Don't set out to write or even to tell a story. Session zero and a lot of conversations with your players will help flesh this out. You give them a premise and then give them a promise. Say, if you give me this particular type of character or this group of characters, then I guarantee you that the story will go from point A to point B. Or collectively, you'll be able to go slay the dragon, whatever the case is. But again, you don't want to necessarily even give them a finite definition or destination, because you want them to kind of come up with this on their own. So that's number one, start with a premise and a promise. Number two, ask the right questions. Now, a lot of people like to do character backstories, and some of them like to give you a questionnaire, which is nice. Those are helpful a lot of times. But many character backstory fans will tell you to have 20 to 30 questions to really help the player flesh out their backgrounds, which is great. If you wanted to have something pre-written, predetermined, and well, let's be honest, if people have that much detail, they're either going to have very generic answers or they're going to end up walking in with a 50-page essay about the backstory of their character. And neither one of those is necessarily what you want for this. You want very specific questions. So at least in my opinion, if you can't get to the heart of a character, who they are, where they've been, and what they want in five questions or less, then you're asking the wrong questions. Number three, flowcharts are your friends. So based on the feedback that you get from the questions that you're asking, from the conversations with your players as you continue to flesh out ideas with them, and the backstories that they come up with, settle on 2 to 4 overarching narratives that will play out. Again, you don't need to have the entire story. You shouldn't have the entire story at this point. And you may not even have a story at all. All you're really looking for is a basic plot line to draw. They could flow in and out of each other or stand entirely separate from one another. Why do I say 2 to 4 overarching narratives? Well, if you have 3 people, obviously you don't want 4 narratives. If you have 6 people, then only having 1 or 2 is not necessarily going to make a whole lot of sense unless there's a very important reason why these characters are so interconnected. Maybe they're all family. Maybe they all came from the same town. At that point, it's a little bit easier for you to just weave all of their stories slightly together. But even then, it still feels a little bit weak to have all of the stories that you pursue together to be about everybody. It's really nice to have certain things where you're like, oh, I remember this name, or I remember this village. This is about me. This is my time to shine. I need to step up, and there's maybe something from my past that I need to deal with. And if you only have one or two, it's very unlikely that everybody's going to have that moment. So I say 2 to 4, depending on, again, what you're comfortable with and what your setting and characters seem to dictate. You want to define whatever villains. Maybe they're very nebulous at this point. Maybe you have a very specific idea in mind for one or two BBEGs, big, bad, evil guys, right? You want to also then determine their goals along the way. So define the villains, determine their goals. And then once you have the overarching narratives, you have the end people that they're going to deal with, have to take down, whether it's a fight or some other means, then you work backwards and establish plot beats along the way. And then you can start to connect your lines. So again, maybe they could flow back and forth, but you start to establish flow charts. And then as one story progresses, as you go on throughout the campaign, then so do the others. If they're at the starting point and they achieve the first milestone on the first story, well, the others don't stay up here because time is passing and the villains are still doing what villains do. So those things continue to progress. You just have to make sure that your stories exist without the expectation of interruption from the PCs. And then as they continue to move on, well, what happens when you inject the PC in this part of the story? That changes things. You may have to then start to branch off additional charts and different webbing there. Or it could be that they didn't change enough of the flow to warrant, you know, putting another entry in. That's up to you. That's up to your story. But there is not enough time in a day or constitution modifiers in D&D to get everyone to every event. So use this to set up your early, your mid, and your late game villain structures. That's why I say 2 to 4. You want to have a little bit of an early thing that people can feel like we accomplished and we finished this arc and we beat the villain here, but wait, there's more story to go. And so at least for me, I like the 3. I've got an early game. I've got a tier 2 leading into tier 3. And then I have like the final villain that's a tier 3. And so we'll talk a little bit more about my example here in a second. But solving one conflict moves the flowchart and untouched arcs. They level up, essentially. That's 3. 4. Prep generically until you have to prep specifically. Now, this may just sound like an improvisational, spontaneous lack of planning thing, but when you're doing stuff that's based on where the characters want to go, where the players want to go, you don't really know, especially if you know there are multiple plot threads all over the place, you're going to run yourself ragged if you be very specific and detailed in all of your plotting and you have it all set up. You're basically going to tell your players, your characters, I need about a month or two to get this all set up. And I'm telling you, if you go this route, you can actually give them the premise. You can do your session 0. You can maybe even host a session 0.5. If you don't know what that is, you can go look back at our Dueling GMs episode. We have a what the heck is session 0. And we'd also talk about session 0.5 in there. But it's basically like an introductory chapter and session where people can kind of get their feet wet and get a feel for their character. But that helps you also learn about the character. So prep generically until you have to prep specifically. You get the basic concepts based on the potential of where the characters, the PCs are wanting to go. Different cities, different NPCs that they may have already mentioned that they want to interact with. Or again, the villains and minions to go with those villains in those particular cities. And then even a loosely established set of encounters that you can go and fine tune later. But I want them to deal with some demons here. I want them to have some undead get issues over here, and maybe the Fae are overrunning a particular force in this area. You can at least kind of basically set up some stuff, and then again, fine tune all the details, hone in on your CR, that type of thing later. They can all be loosely established until you know you're going to need more specifics. You got to focus, and you can't overextend yourself. You might have fun knowing that the second son of the Archduke in some exotic locale is, you know, Ferdinand, whatever his name is, the third. And but unless the party will be traveling there or he's central to one of the main plots, your time is best spent elsewhere. You will, again, run yourself ragged in your world building. You only really need to be a week or two ahead of the characters in your detailed prep, as long as you are doing some generic prep along the way. And then number five, let the characters decide what's important to them. You do not need an epic storyline. You just need a hook. You need something to entice them and make them realize, oh, yeah, this was maybe something that had to do with my backstory. This is maybe the DM leading me in a direction so I can deal with something that I mentioned from my past because I recognize that name or I recognize that item or that event in history deals with my family or my backstory. Just give them a little hook and let them decide what they want to do with it, if anything at all. And then occasionally, as the stories continue to progress, remind them that the other arcs exist and are moving. There may be something related to their unwillingness to participate in a war. And over time, they go into a city and they've been away for a while. They come back to the city and they find out that the war has actually blown up and is progressing. You don't have to tell them any more than that, but it gives them a little bit of, oh, yeah. I ran away from that war, and maybe are there repercussions to the fact that I'm not participating in this? You can give them those types of little things, you know, news on the road of, hey, the fairies seem to be taking over more of the Enchanted Forest. I really wish somebody would deal with that. And the PCs are kind of like, we might have accidentally let them in earlier and we just decided it was okay. But again, that's up to them to decide whether they want to deal with that or not. And then check in with your players, because sometimes a less assertive player may be inclined to let their story take a back seat. You have some characters and some players who are much more front and center, not even necessarily hogging the limelight, but just kind of naturally what they do. And if you have an introvert and a less assertive player, then they may just kind of say, oh, we'll get to my story when we get to my story. But you need to make sure you remind them that it doesn't mean that their story and their character is less important. So check in with them, make sure that they're not feeling that. And then, to some degree, an ignored story arc, one that you've laid out there, you've set the hook a few times, it may also indicate that it's a weaker or an undeveloped plot on your part. So that gives you time to work on that as they progress a different angle before you dangle that out as bait a second time and make that bait, that little worm, just a little bit juicier. So that's your five things. Let me go back, work through them, and give you an example from my own campaign, and maybe it'll help just a little bit. So give them a premise and a promise. So here's what I established with my current group. I've been running them for a little over 2 years with the occasional breaks in between, but for the most part, every single week, and we go for 4 to 6 hours once a week. So we've been at this for a long time. They started at level 5. We just recently hit level 12. And because of the way this is set up, I honestly couldn't tell you how long this is going to run or what level they're going to finish at. That's both daunting, but also kind of exciting to me. But I started with this. Here's the premise. You have only recently become aware of the fact that you are a consecuted soul. Now, let me stop here. We're running in Wildemount. So first of all, potential spoilers, anybody who has not caught up on campaign 2 of Critical Role, there may be a little bit here, may not be, but know that. But this is a consecuted soul from Wildemount in Exandria. I go on. Consecution is the Kryn ritual of binding a soul to a Luxon beacon, enabling the soul to be reborn in a new body when its previous body dies. For some of you, having grown up inside the Kryn dynasty, this is not a new thing. Constitution is essentially your religion and science all mixed as one. And it's accepted as a general way of life inside the dynasty, even if not everyone has been constituted. Most have, and everyone knows what it is and what it means. For some of you, this awakening has occurred in a more isolated way. You're actually living outside of the dynasty, and when these vivid dreams come flooding in that seem almost like real memories, they're terrifying. Perhaps you talked with someone you trust about it, or maybe you kept it to yourself. Either way, here's the premise. When a summons arrived for you to appear before the Bright Queen, it was both unsurprising and uniquely scary at the same time. How did she know? What does she know? Each of you have found yourself in Rosana, the Kreen capital, in the region of Zoras. You are to appear before the Bright Queen at the Lucid Bastion tomorrow. Tonight is the time to regale other adventurers at the local tavern with tales of your previous exploits. Where did you grow up? What have you done? And what do you speculate you've been summoned here for? It appears that there are a handful of others here with similar stories. Perhaps it's time to start figuring this mystery out. So that was the premise. I set them up with that as the concept and said, drop yourself literally anywhere in the whole of Wildemount, but just know that you're actually starting in this particular location. And here's how you got there. You were summoned, you were teleported in and basically escorted to this place. You seem to be kept in high regard, and basically they're putting you up in this tavern for free. So go wild, start to get to know people. And that's what we did for session 0.5. They started out at the tavern, not so they could get their mission, but basically so they could start to interact with some NPCs that I had for them. And so they could actually start to meet each other, but kind of on an equal playing field, knowing that they were all summoned and they were all connected in some way. And so they were allowed to kind of flesh that out a little bit. And then we finished that session with a meeting with the Bright Queen. And so with that, I established the final part of the premise, which was that all of the people who were summoned to the tavern, the queen had reason to believe that they were all formerly constituted heroes of some various standing, but they were all now in their current iteration struggling to connect with their past lives, which was not supposed to be the case for anyone associated with the Luxon Beacons and Constitution. Basically, the way it should have worked is when you hit puberty, essentially adolescence, then suddenly everything kind of comes back to you and you get a coach that kind of helps you work through that. And then you just share your memory, share your soul with all of your previous existences. But for these characters, that's not what happened. Then the promise was that to the best of the queen's estimation, she believes that there was something connected with their particular deaths or lives that was connected to a vestige of divergence, which in Exandria and Wildemount, that's essentially a souped up legendary artifact of some sort that kind of levels up as you grow into its capabilities. And they are quite rare. But for some reason, she believes that there was some sort of connection to either their life or their death related to a vestige of divergence. And that's the best she could guess as to why there was a disconnect. And so the promise was, if you find the location of a vestige associated with a past life and or the location of a previous death, then she suspected they would start to learn more about their past. It wasn't a do this, return the items to me, do this, and then report back to me. It was literally I am just as curious as you are. Do what you will with this information. And if you feel like it's worth bringing back to me, then let me know. Otherwise, the items are connected to you, not to me. And so do what you will with them. So I basically sent them on a artifact hunting mission. But they were determining where they were looking for the artifacts and which ones that they thought they were connected to. Now, I had a 1A in this that was both kind of premise and promise that I told them out of character that we were going to do milestone leveling based on the fact that they either discovered a new vestige or one of the vestiges they already had awakened in some way, basically leveled up. And so they knew right away, and they still to this day know that if I tell them, you just got to level up, great. One of the items that we found, even though we didn't necessarily realize it, must have been a vestige. Or, oh, hey, somebody's going to get a message from the DM this week because one of the items they had just awakened. How in the world did we actually pull that off? Because there are very specific guidelines as to what may trigger that. And so it's, again, that was me saying you are developing your own story and your own plot in the right direction. And if they go for multiple weeks, even months at a time without a level up, that's kind of my hint that they're just kind of off on a wild goose chase and not accomplishing a whole lot. So there have been weeks where they'd actually had a level up in back-to-back weeks. And they also went 3 or more months at one point without a level up. It just depends on, you know, what they end up accomplishing. But I told them that up front. So they had the premise, they had the promise, and then they actually knew how they were going to gauge how well they were doing with both of those. Number two was ask the right questions. In this case, I gave them 4 questions. Number one was, what have you been doing prior to being summoned? The Bright Queen's agents found you somehow. Were you in prison? Were you out in the middle of nowhere? Were you serving as a city guard somewhere? Were you maybe living it up in your private mansion? So I gave them a few options, but most of them kind of went with it in a completely different direction, which was fine. That's something that good DMs need to learn, is that you should give them options because it helps narrow the field quite a bit. If you just say, what were you doing? That's sometimes a little bit too broad. And then they are stymied with too much freedom of choice. You give them a few options and they'll either select those options or they'll say, well, what about this instead? And it kind of generates some ideas for them. So what have you been doing prior to being summoned? Number two, as these memories begin flooding back in, take stock of some of them. Have you at some point been a different race? Have you lived in a completely different area? I'm forcing them, even though they don't necessarily know their backstory, I'm forcing them basically to give me little snippets of those stories so I can weave them back together. This was a really interesting premise that I gave them, which was basically, you don't know your past, you only know your present. And you get to determine your future based on what you learn about your past. So I needed a little bit to work with so I can start to weave everything together. Question 3 I gave them was, what general area of Wildemount was your current iteration born in? And does your character have a recollection yet of where they perhaps died, at least in one previous life? You might be living anywhere, but there are very few known Luxon in the world, and most currently are somewhere in Jorhas. So I gave them that. Where were you born? And then do you have any recollection of where they might have died? And for some of them, they leaned on the first one. For some of them, they leaned on the second one. Some gave me both answers. But either way, I was able to work with the information they gave me to start to build out some stories for them. And then the 4th question was set up a little bit first. This is going to be a very character-driven series of quests, which is what we're talking about. Having a decent idea of where you grew up and with whom will be likely be extremely important. Come up with one important piece of family or village legend that may even seem to be too amazing to be true. What was the story and where did it take place? Alternately, if there's no piece of family or village lore for your character, then instead you've been getting strong images in your mind as if flashbacks to an important place, to a past self somewhere in the world. Where is it? And do you know why? And some of them really leaned into this and had there was one particular character that had not only flashbacks, but basically would dream and start sleepwalking in the dream and walking in that particular direction. And I was able to do so much with that. Some of them had just some vague stuff. And then some of them didn't necessarily give me a whole lot of that immediately, but I was able to kind of pull it out of them later. But with those 4 questions, they were able to give me a pretty well-rounded idea of where to go with their past, which is kind of a weird statement, but hopefully you're tracking with me there. And it gave them quite a bit to work with in terms of who they are now as a result. So it was 4 questions, and that gave me enough to start to weave a web, craft a story wholly centered on the characters and their histories. I had no story whatsoever at this point, even to the point of finishing session 0, where they met with the queen and she said what they were doing. I had 0 story. But like I said, we've been running this for 2.5 years and they loved it. So number three, flowcharts are your friends. But given all of this information and knowing I started this campaign with 6 PCs, about 6 sessions in, 2 more joined us. So we were up to 8, if my fingers will cooperate, 8 PCs. And prior to our current dungeon crawl arc, we had a 9th jump in. That is a lot to manage, and I did it with a flowchart. So the first thing I did was I started by grouping the PCs that I knew for certain had a connection. Like I said, there was one that was sleepwalking, but the angle that she was sleepwalking said it was north, northwest, somewhere in that general area. And I knew where she started because, again, she gave me a starting location of where she had been. Well, she was angling to the northwest and she had talked about having this vision of destruction, an army marching through and everybody just dying, wholesale slaughter. Great. That's a lot to work with. Somebody else gave me a specific location where they thought they had died. It just happened to be in a particular area in that same, well, this is northwest for me, for you, northwest area, and I could find it on a map and drop a pin in it. Those two seem to die potentially in the same location, possibly at the same time. There I had a connection. There was another character that was playing, or another player that was playing a Kenku. And I didn't have a ton of past, other than the fact that he seemed to be sneak thief, on the run type of thing. And I wanted to run with the Kenku idea of not necessarily having their own voice. And so I ended up tying that character also in with this particular set. And if you're familiar with Wildemount, this area called Malaysmere, there's now just absolute ruins. And so I started to be able to flesh out why was Malaysmere in ruins. And I tied in all three of those stories into that particular one, which we'll get into in a little more detail here in a second. Then I had 2 other characters that said that they grew up together in a small farming town just outside of one of the capital cities. Great. It makes sense then if they're still together, that it would have been cool that in some way they were together in the past. And they sometimes, to some degree, were best friends, and to some degree, they would butt heads because lifestyles did not necessarily flow together. They also both left their town at around the same time and went their separate ways and have only recently kind of come back together almost by force because of what's happened here. So they hadn't seen each other in a number of years. And I thought, how cool would that be if they also had a connected past? So I worked those in together. Then I had a character, a player, first time really playing in any long-term campaign, and he literally just made Link. So we have Link, Legend of Zelda, in our party, a Fey Wanderer Ranger, and so I was just leaning into the fact he wants to be Link. His character description is exactly Link. We joke all the time about, you know, he doesn't really talk. He just kind of makes yeah sounds. And so I just worked in the idea that he probably had a village, that his particular constitution reincarnation seems to just be that he keeps being reborn as a new iteration of Link every single time. And they know that he's ready to go and defend the village and defend the world when he can actually go through a particular temple run and acquire the sword. Right. So I was leaning into that quite a bit, both for him because he loved the concept of it. And I thought, OK, it's fine. I'm not really breaking any sort of weird copyright stuff because, you know, we're not publishing any of this. So we just had fun with that. And then later on, I decided to start weaving that in as there were a few story lines that were separate for a while. And there were a few decisions along the way. And a few NPCs that seemed missing along the way that I ended up weaving his story in with another character who basically gave me, I was in a cult. It was a cult of Thrizzadoon, who is like the great destroyer. And my past is not good and I want nothing to do with that. But if there's any remnant of that cult left, then I want to be responsible for taking it down. Partly because I feel responsible in general, but partly because I'm dead because they stabbed me in the back and killed me. So I've given him a few flashbacks in that regard, but I've woven those two particular characters together as well. Then I had a final one that started out with one particular character, and I was working on weaving that story in potentially with any of them, but then he decided, don't really have a good feel for the character, let me back them out, and let me bring another character in, which kind of left me at a little bit of a tough spot, because then we had a character that was introduced that wasn't brought before the Queen. And the Queen said, these are all the people that I'm aware of that have this particular condition. So if you weren't brought before the Queen, the suspicion at least was you may not have a vestige. So I've told him up front, hey, this is the thing you're trading off. Just be aware of that. And he's been fine with it. So I have him kind of, and he said, I love the story that we're doing. I know we'll get to whatever story you've got for Willem down the road. But for now, let me just be the support character and help other people figure out their past. And I'm good with that, which has been a huge blessing. So now I had three different story arcs, at least groupings. And so I needed to figure out, like, what was the story, right? And so I came up with one of them, and I won't get into all the details. If you're interested, please drop me a line, or you can listen to at least some of our old actual play stuff from early on in the campaign in this exact channel. But I had one that was basically a dragon arc that really kind of had three separate cults of Tiamat that we're all vying for a particular thing. I grouped that in, and I had a final boss of potentially, if they do nothing in this regard, Tiamat will be summoned. Tiamat will then be the final boss. So I had that as an end. The one with Link and the one with the cult, former cult member, well, he said cult of Thrizdun, and I know of another cult of Thrizdun that's a part of Exandria and a part of Wildmount, and that's the Angel of Irons cult from campaign 2. So I was able to weave in a little of this, even knowing that we started about 6 months prior to where campaign 2 started. So I was able to use a few NPCs like Oban, for example, and give a little teaser to some of my players that actually listen to that. So when there's a few things that come up related to any of the Critical Role campaigns, then they're like, oh, I know that name. So I have that one that's basically an Angel of Irons arc, and they're running with that one. And then the third group, the two that died in the same location, the one Kenku, I basically established that the destructive thing that happened was an invading army from another plane. What plane would that be really cool to do from? Oh, I like the idea of Modrons. Nobody uses Modrons for the most part anymore, and started building out basically this massive robot army invasion, and eventually ended up with a character who declared themselves to be Primus, but basically is an Ultron type of character. And now I have a big, bad, evil guy of this Ultron type character. So I have a Primus arc, and then the Angel of Irons arc potentially could result in, or could have prior to this, if any of my players are listening, you guys have thwarted enough of that it will probably not play out quite the same way anymore, but potentially could have turned into a Dracolich version of Ganon from Link's stories. So not a spoiler warning there. That's not going to necessarily play out the same way. But those are my three big bad. I had an Ultra Primus type of thing. I had a Dracolich Ganon, and I had Tiamat as the final bosses. But then I had to work myself backwards, right? So I'm moving my way up, come up with a few story beats. And the way I did that was I started charting out a few vague central encounter types, either focus on particular NPCs or creatures and slotting them at various CR positions. I didn't want to throw, you know, a CR 14 or a CR 10 at them when they're, you know, level 5 when they started. But at the same time, if I'm still giving them challenges that are, you know, challenge rating 8s and they're level 14 as a singular fight, well, they might as well not have that fight, right? So I started charting that out a little bit along the way. And then I started separating certain plot events because some of them have longer timelines and some of them have shorter timelines. So many of them also flowed into or out of each other, especially the line with the cult. Certain factions were vying for a singular resource or event, and not all of them could acquire that particular thing. So this also started to give me reason for particular deaths and potential locations for each of the vestiges they were meant to find along the way. And then at this point, I also had enough information from the players, from my own stories, to start actually determine the items themselves, either to use what Matthew Mercer and his team have come up with, or come up with some of my own based more specifically on the characters that I've got. And I based it on the PC info, the location, and also past deity affiliations that I had gotten from some of them. Then, when we started, so did an internal timer on all three story arcs. And I didn't need this to be based on calendar time, but on equivalent time. So as they progressed down the flow chart of one arc, one milestone began ticking away for all the others as well. And then that also gave me the opportunity to increase the level or the CR for particular difficulties as things progressed, because minions get stronger, bosses find or create better minions along the way, and stories get more robust. And so the plot devices also would move forward and increase. So that's the flowcharts. Number four, prep generically until you have to prep specifically. So after we finished session 0.5, I had about 90% certainty of which locations they would head to first. If you're wondering, Blumenthal, because that's where two of the characters were from. They decided, let's kill potentially two birds with one stone and start there. Even if we get information for only one of them, it's a higher likelihood. Relatively smart. So I devoted my time and energy toward getting that as ready as possible. And then provided they asked the right questions and followed the right clues, this would give them their first vestige, some historical connections for a couple of the characters, and a lead for a second PC. This also, as I was building it out and I was using a few random number generator treasure things, I was like, okay, the queen also said be on the lookout for additional Luxon beacons, because if you were born, consecuted in a particular area, by definition, that means there's a Luxon beacon within 100 miles of both your death and your birth. So I had to work that in. And so I just threw that into one of my charts, and in the series of the very first story arc, Luxon Beacon comes up. So my group has found a Luxon Beacon almost since session 4, and they've been walking around with it, not telling a single soul that they have this thing, which may or may not over time cause potential other issues. But I threw that in there, and I was even surprised at that turning up, and it's allowed even one particular PC to go in a completely different direction, take a few levels of cleric and making it cleric of the Luxon. She was already an astromancer, druid of the stars. And so everything now is very metaphysical, astromancy. It's been a very cool development, but a lot of that has to do with the fact that she's been the one essentially carrying this Luxon beacon around for 3 or 4 months at this point. And then I use this time to generically continue building out more details on these story arcs and a few locations that I knew they would eventually travel to. I base this mostly geographically, as low level characters have very few travel means. So I figure they're going to have to go by cart, by foot. They're probably going to go to places that were much closer. I did guess somewhat poorly, and they ended up going to what would, in my estimation, destination number 3. Next, but because I at least had something ready to go, I was able to improvise some travel, allow space for some descriptive discoveries along the way and some roleplay interaction from them. And then they had a nice evening in Nicodranas, being entertained by the Ruby of the Sea. And then by the next session, I had finished what I needed and they were off to the races for another month or more. Which leads me to my next idea for you here, which is use your dungeon crawls to space out your world building time. If your group's anything like mine, the travel and roleplay can sometimes bog down a little bit. But when it comes time to making decisions, rationing resources like spell slots and actual combat, especially with us, 9 PCs plus your monsters, then your dungeon crawls are easy couple hour plans to just plop down. And it guarantees they're going to take at least 3 times as long to get through it as you expect them to. So then you can use any lag, not as a week off, but as a time to just get ahead a little bit in your planning. Number 5, Let the characters decide what's important to them. So much of this particular campaign has been a struggle between the players wanting to share story time with each other, which is good. Sharing is always good. But then the PCs on the flip side all being much more centered on what's important to them. Because they know that the time is ticking and eventually something bad will happen if they're not around for it. It's happened multiple times already for them. Everyone thinks that their story is the most important. And I would say, let this happen. If you're careful, you don't drive too hard, the players themselves will establish the rails they want to be on. You don't need to make any rails for them, which is fantastic. And because there's complete buy-in, there are no complaints no matter where the story goes, unless it's in-character complaints about somebody saying that they're being forgotten or left behind. And again, a little bit of PC butting of heads is good for development. And then you just simply need to remind the characters and or the players every so often of the stakes. Give them a quick rundown of plot threads that are still dangling, but you don't have to nudge them into anything. If they want to skip entire chapters, entire arcs, just let them. Moving faster toward the end game scenario isn't always a bad thing. It may simply mean that the end is that much more difficult to overcome. There may be multiple complications that come crashing down all at once. They may have less allies at their side as those allies are, or potential allies at least, are dealing with their own issues that the PCs ignored. And some characters may legitimately decide they've moved on from what was initially pressing to them at the beginning of the game. So what they thought was very important to them at level 1 or 5 in our instance, some of them have decided this is less important and I'm here more for everyone else. This is growth. Let it happen. Just make sure that the players know that they're not being left out. You can offer alternative options for story progress instead. Hey, you're not interested in this. Can I offer, do you want to pursue something else instead? What is your character actually interested in doing? And that's what I was able to do with the character I mentioned, Willem. He brought in a different PC. The premise essentially changed for him, and the promise as well of find your vestige, you'll find your history. But I didn't want him to miss out on that particular aspect. So I was still able to craft something that I know what his history was. And I also know why he wasn't summoned, even though technically he's having some of the same issues. And what I've been able to do is because he's been willing to wait, I've decided once they finish the 3 arcs to the extent that they're going to finish them, the final arc, the final trajectory is Willem's story. So he's been holding out. He's going to get a slightly different flavor, and all the other PCs that are at least willing to travel with him will be able to participate in this final overarching culmination of everything that'll bring together some of the other aspects. While also giving him his time to shine. So in all, it's been a fantastic experiment. I often build heavily in this direction anyway, but then for this particular campaign, which we started at the beginning of the pandemic, we started it virtually, and I thought, honestly, it was just going to run for a month or two, and then we would get back together face-to-face, and this would just be thrown by the wayside. So it's been great that I didn't do a whole lot of planning ahead of time, and kind of decided to go this route and kind of play it by ear because, well, we've gone, like I said, over 2 years at this point. And had I done intentionally less planning or structured it in a slightly different way, I'm not sure what we'd be doing, what we'd be playing at this point, because we still haven't gone back face to face. We have too many people that are potentially high risk or live with other people that are high risk and other people that have weird work schedules. It's been great for us to just kind of stay where we are. And so it's been fantastic for that reason as well. But I wanted to see what would happen if I simply didn't have a story in mind at all and let it be dictated by the players. So instead, I took nibbles, crumbs that they gave me, and wove the best tapestry that I could. Perhaps even too well, because some of them are convinced that everything that's happened so far is 100% connected and will be revealed at some later date, which is not true, my players. But I've really enjoyed it, and I found it to be my favorite way to DM moving forward. So I hope this helps. Maybe you've never heard of this concept before. Maybe you've only kind of heard rumblings of something like this. And maybe to you, this is just kind of bonkers and crazy. Let me know. If you got questions, you got comments, if you want clarification on how this plays out, please, all you have to do is ask. I'm here, and until next time, catch you later.